You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me, as always, is...
Mac Lacey. On this incredibly special occasion, we have just, within the last few minutes here, seen the trailer for Season 3, The Mandalorian. This is not the teaser trailer, this is the full-blown trailer. We've been waiting on the edges of our seats for halftime of this football game. but we have now seen the trailer, and we're here to talk about it.
Oh, and what an amazing trailer it is. If you haven't watched the trailer yet, what are you doing? You need to go watch the trailer, then come back right here for a scene-by-scene breakdown and line analysis of this trailer, because we're going to do that right now, and we hope that you guys join us for when The Mandalorian premieres on March 1st. We're going to be doing scene-by-scene breakdowns for every single episode of The Mandalorian and do voicemail hotline episodes where you guys call in with your voicemail theories. And in fact, if you got theories coming out of this trailer, go ahead and call our voicemail hotline, and you can find that in our notes. But I don't want to waste any time, because I think people are here to listen to just a breakdown of, okay, what do we think is going on here in this Season 3 trailer? And I got to say, first off, I think it does a good job of giving us more without giving away the story.
Absolutely. I would totally agree with you there.
Right? There's still, like, I don't really know, beside what the first trailer gave us was, like, it was kind of setting up this conflict between Bo-Katan and Din. We got zero Bo-Katan in this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, okay, that's still the only thing we have to go off of, except just a little hint from Carson Teva and Dr. Pershing, where it's like, okay, maybe that's the actual thing that Season 3 is actually about. Because we've talked about this before, but we think that the Bo-Katan thing is kind of a red herring.
Yeah, it'll probably be resolved earlier on in the season. I do expect it'll crop up and be a source of tension and conflict for a few episodes. But yeah, then I think we're moving on to something else. Something that, we still really don't know. We know now a bunch of... We know more details about the places that conflict is going to take us. And that is so exciting. That's exactly what a trailer should do. It's just feeding us just enough to, you know, really sink that hook in.
I just had an idea. I've got to go write in the notes real quick. But This was such a great trailer. Like, this is, without a doubt, probably the best trailer that The Mandalorian has had. Would you agree with that?
Yes. I have one little complaint about it, and we can get to it when we get to it in the trailer breakdown. Just one moment that didn't really do it for me. As a trailer, it says nothing about the show, obviously. I think just... In the considering the craft of cutting together a piece of marketing material for a work of, you know, film or television, I think this trailer really, really, really exceeded.
Yes, we also got some. So our friend Jonah Marie just sent us something about the directors of Season 3, which I guess they just now announced as well. But we've got Rick Famuyiwa coming back to direct, which is great. You know, he's been with us since Season 1.
Yes, always love his episodes.
And a lot of new people, too. Rachel Morrison.
Okay.
Lee Isaac Chung. Okay. Carl Weathers is back to direct.
Nice.
Peter Ramsey.
Okay.
And Bryce Dallas Howard.
Nice. I mean, I love the Bryce episodes too.
Oh yeah, they're so good.
The BDH episodes.
They're so good.
You always like bring her in for when you need like the emotional crux of the season, you know? That's what her role is in my view.
Her episodes are great. All right, so let's just go ahead and get into a scene by scene breakdown, and let's start from the very beginning. And we'll come back and, if we have time, talk about the promotional art and the poster and stuff. But we begin this trailer on a rocky-looking planet, and we hear Din Jaren narrating. He says, our people are scattered. And then you can see some people trekking through that same terrain, but you can't really make them out. And then like stars in the galaxy. So our people are scattered like stars in the galaxy. And these people are beginning to become more in focus. And we realize it's a group of Mandalorians just trekking their way through this terrain. And I've got a question for you. Is that Paz Vizsla on the right? If you're looking at the trailer right now, can you tell if it's a bigger Mandalorian? So I just kind of assumed it was Paz.
It, I mean, definitely has that bulky silhouette, you know? It definitely could be, but we see him in some shots later in the trailer that if that is Paz, it raises some questions in my mind. Yeah.
It makes sense. So, okay. This group of Mandalorians have to be the children of the Watch, right?
I mean, they definitely look more rugged. Like they've kind of, you know, they've been away from the mainstream resources and stuff of mainstream Mandalorian culture. Like they're not getting their armor repaired that often from the looks of them, you know.
Very season one Din, early season one Din before he gets the new armor in episode 3.
Yeah,
right.
And like, no unified color schemes or anything like that. It's all just kind of a hodgepodge mismatch.
Yeah, yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah. I like it a lot. So okay, Paz may be on the right. We jump cut to Mandos hitting their chest, and again, like you said, these Mandalorians wear different colored armor, more pieced together, like you said, and again that. They're separate from Bo-Katan's Mandalorians. These are not Bo-Katan's, I don't think, because you would see more of a uniform color scheme, kind of the blue going on with them.
Yeah, not to jump ahead in the trailer too much, but later on we see the shot of kind of like some Mandos jumping out of a ship of some kind, kind of doing an airdrop thing. They all have like a unified look to them, the blue motif, and I think that's either like Death Watch flashback, or it's Bo-Katan's kind of Night Owl color scheme.
Interesting. Which she was a former member of Death Watch.
Right. But all of that to say, these Mandalorians here, I think, are definitely different.
There's a shot where you see like a red colored, like a rust maroon colored Mandalorian. And then the Mandalorian to his left has a symbol on his shoulder. And I'm trying to make out that symbol. It's really hard, but it almost kind of looks like a wolf a little bit.
Yeah, or like a bear almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. I don't think I've seen it anywhere.
Yeah, same. So, okay, that's probably his crest, right? So,
yeah, new house, new clan, something like that.
And then we get Din asking, what are we? What do we stand for? And Din emerges from a cavern while other Mandalorians watch on. And he certainly sounds like a leader here, right?
Right. He's casting vision for a group of people. It doesn't sound like he's just talking about him and Grogu or something like that.
It's interesting because like all through season one and two, he's kind of rejected that leadership role, especially in the season two finale when he realized like, oh, this Darksaber is a big deal and like people are going to follow me. It seems like he's embracing that now.
Yeah. Which is an interesting kind of move to take. I don't know. I have so many questions with the little bit of new information we got in the Book of Boba Fett and how they're going to work all that in and just how that's setting this season up. I don't know. I'm very, very curious. But
and if for whatever reason you didn't watch the Book of Boba Fett, that is absolutely like you have to watch it because there's a whole episode about just the Mandalorian in it.
I mean, there's two pretty much. Like
it's
two of the
kind of
eight.
A big deal. It's kind of a big deal. So
would definitely recommend watching that one.
So here's what I'm going to guess, Mac. At the what we're hearing and like that scene where he's emerging from the cavern, that's probably, I'm going to guess, maybe later in the season.
Yeah.
And it's like he's realized, okay, I'm going to have to lead this group. And again, I think they're probably people that he knows, people that he grew up with in the Watch. And that's interesting.
Wild theory just coming out the gate here. I'm just going to get the irresponsible speculation machine up and running.
Go ahead.
But what if, so I love the Armorer as a character, heaven forbid, what if
something happened?
Maybe like by mid-season, she's not around anymore. I could see her and Bo-Katan going at it.
Oh no.
You know, so there's a million different things that could happen, but for some reason she's out of the picture
and he has to lead.
And then we both agree that by the end of the season, we'll probably see kind of Mandalorians coming together in some way under a common banner, maybe.
Yeah, I would assume.
So maybe Bo-Katan's kind of got her people, and then Din has to step up to take the Armorer's place to kind of lead his people, you know?
So one last thing before we move on from this opening section of the trailer. The planet that they're on, I'm wondering if this is, number one, Mandalore, their home planet. Like, we do see Mandalore later, and the section that we see is Sundari, which is that big open shell that's broken, and we can see the environment around it. It's absolutely glass, like Boba Fett said in season 2 finale. But I'm wondering, like, did they actually do that to the entire planet? So could this be a different section of the planet? Because it kind of looks similar to what we've seen of the outside of Mandalore before in the Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. Or is this somewhere like Concordon or Concordia? Different planets in that Mandalorian sector. Is that basically what I'm getting at? Is that group of Mandalorians seeking something? Are they like exploring and trying to get to something, almost like a religious type ceremony or something like that? I don't know, but there's something going on there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I love that idea that it's almost kind of, we've talked a lot, especially when season one of The Mandalorian was coming out. We talked a lot about like the mythicalization of Mandalorians and some different areas of Star Wars and how we really liked that. It almost, there's a lot from this trailer that's actually evoking Indiana Jones for me in a lot of ways.
Yes.
With like these different groups all racing to find something, or you know, we've got our main hero, but he's gonna stumble into a couple different groups of people throughout the course of his adventure that are gonna like help him along the way, or
Maybe not everyone that you think is a foe is actually a foe, like kind of like in The Last Crusade, where the people with the tattoo on their chest ended up being good guys.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
And then some of the people you think are on your side may not be. So, yeah, I mean, the trailer was very much giving me that kind of tone.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, really good. That's really good. So we cut to black. We get the Lucasfilm logo. The music is intense. I think the music really sets the tone for this season. I think this season is absolutely going to be bonkers. It's going to be intense.
Just from the... We were seeing stuff in this trailer that was wild.
Dude, I cannot wait till March 1st. Oh my gosh, it's going to be so much fun on the podcast. I cannot wait for this. We are officially in the Mandalorian season, and it feels so good.
For sure. It's going to be back. It's going to be back.
So then we cut to Din's N1 starfighter flying in hyperspace. Grogu is with him, and then we get this line from Din. Being a Mandalorian's not just learning about how to fight. You also have to know how to navigate the galaxy. That way, you'll never be lost. Yeah. Love this line.
Yeah, it's letting me know that like one of the things that I've been really looking forward to and hoping to get out of this season is getting into the conflicts between different groups of Mandalorians about like, what does it mean to be a Mandalorian? Is there an idea of Mandalorianism that's acceptable kind of across all of like where's the common ground we can find, you know?
I was thinking that when I heard that line the first time I was watching, I was like, man, we need to jump back into Mandalorian culture, Mandalorian history, because this kind of adds just another layer to what we already know. You know, it's not just about fighting, but you have to know how to navigate the galaxy. And that might look like more than just literally navigating the galaxy, right? Like,
oh yeah.
How do you deal with people and situations and all these different things? Maybe we need to resurrect a certain series very, very soon.
Maybe revisit an idea of something we've done in the past, but
yeah,
update it and revamp it. Yeah.
Hmm.
I could see some room in our slate for something like that, maybe.
Maybe some people should circle mid-February in their calendars.
Interesting.
Back to the trailer. Din and Grogu land in a very vibrant city. He's walking in it. Okay, we speculated this last trailer, but is this a revamped Navarro or somewhere else?
I'm leaning towards Navarro just because it feels like, you know, Grief is kind of...
He's in charge.
As Navarro looks nicer, his clothes get more elaborate, you know?
Right.
And so the correlation's there. I don't know if causation's there, but...
There's also some visual clues that this could be Navarro and not a different planet. It could totally be a different planet, and Grief is just in charge of a different planet now, which is totally possible. But there's some visual clues that this could be like a revamped, nicer, vibrant Navarro. There's a Kowakian monkey lizard in a tree, and I think that's actually kind of a big deal because in season one, the first episode, you see them roasting on a spittle.
Yeah. So they've gone from food to friend.
Right, exactly. Which we talked about in that first breakdown that we ever did of like, they're kind of sentient.
It's a gray area.
So that's good to see. Grief Karga shows up looking regal. Man, he's looking
so fly.
He's looking good. He slaps hands with Mando, but then notice behind them, there's a statue of IG-11 standing on stormtrooper helmets.
Yeah, it's interesting. It'd be wild to know if the people of Navarro like actually regard IG-11 as like a folk hero or something, or if that was just a nice symbol to like create this work that symbolically represents Navarro's triumph over the Imperial Remnant, or you know, whatever the case may be.
Right. But, or like if this is a brand new planet, like Grief just showed up and like, let me tell you the tale of IG-11, and they built a memorial for him or something on this planet. I don't know. I've got another question, though. Is it possible, because I don't know like what IG-11 is made of, but he didn't actually melt, but like magma like formed around him? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know what he's made of. It could be the same material as like the droids that work in the magma on Mustafar. I don't know.
It's just something to keep in mind.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you why in just a second, because when we get to the end of the trailer, that statue isn't there anymore.
I mean, that's like a fortified defense at that point, right?
That's something to hide behind.
But I mean, like if IG-11 could come back alive and like help defend the town or whatever.
Oh gosh, yeah. That would be awesome. That would be incredible. Again, maybe this is Navarro, maybe not. Then we cut to the N1 flying through a storm, and this is where the trailer starts to kind of get that more intense tone, especially as they're diving through the storm, and it seems like there's a lot of turbulence going on. Then we cut to the armor dipping her stuff into the smelting pot. And then Din says, I'm going to Mandalore so that I may be forgiven for my transgressions, which picks up that storyline from the Book of Boba Fett. Who he's saying that to is, I don't know. That's interesting. Well, yeah. I don't know who that is. But then we see the glass surface of Mandalore and the broken shell of Sundari, which was the capital city of Mandalore. Just quick little history lesson. The reason they lived in big bubble cities is because they nuked their own planet so much, the radiation outside made it impossible to live outside during the Mandalorian Civil Wars. So they have to live on all these bubble cities.
This is like the destruction of the reconstructed planet.
Which is just not good.
Mandalore's been through it, y'all.
It needs some rest. That planet needs some rest. A good at least 1,000 years of nothing happening on it.
Just leave it alone.
Then we see R5 pop into the droid cockpit, and I'm thinking this is the N1 cockpit.
Yeah, I mean, we see Grogu in Din's lap a good bit in this trailer, so I'm thinking they may have taken on an astromech.
Yeah, so like Din is starting to build that Star Wars crew, which I really love, right? Like you get a droid, you got some people with you. Maybe they need, which we assume this is R5-D4, which is the droid that Motivator blew up in original Star Wars. also Hero to the Rebellion if you read the what's that called? I forgot what it's called.
The Red One?
Yeah, it's a short story, but I forgot what the collection was called.
Oh, From a Certain Point of View.
That's it. That's it. So they're definitely on Tatooine because Peli waves them off from her hangar, which is on Tatooine, and says, "May the Force be with you," as they take off. So again, just some speculation here and just connecting the dots. There's a reason that Din needs a droid.
Yeah.
What that is, we don't know yet. But he needs a droid.
If we're going by Knights of the Old Republic logic, there's a door that can only be hacked if you have a certain like tech skill level, and so he's picking up a droid.
Which mine was always low. Like, I was like, I'm going to do persuading.
Persuading. The one tech thing I would do would be computer hacking, which was different from security.
Yeah.
Computers were more useful because you could, like, hack into security systems and, like, blow people up in a different room and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we see fireworks over a city. Now, Mac, the trailer kind of suggests that that when they take off from Peli's hangar, that this might be the same place.
Yeah.
Is this Mos Eisley?
I that's what my read was just from watching the trailer.
What are they celebrating?
That's a great question.
Death, like the Death Star being blown up, or is the Battle of Jakku happen? No, this is 6 years after it anyway. So this is, maybe it's like a celebration of like either the Death Star blowing up or the Battle of Jakku ending or something like that. Like this right. is like Republic Day or something.
I don't know. We know from like the Book of Boba Fett, it wouldn't be like the celebration of like the overturn from the Empire or something like that. They've already kind of.
But maybe they do it every year. It's like Independence Day.
Yeah,
like,
it could be a recurring celebration. Who knows?
Yeah, it's like July 4th. I don't know. But that's cool. It makes me think that maybe that's what it is because we see Coruscant later.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if like we'll see Coruscant also celebrating. And you see like a sad Dr. Pershing like as the fireworks are going off. Yeah. So fireworks over the city. And then we hear Din say, "This is the way." And then Grogu touches some of the controls on the ship to make it go faster. Zoomies. He's got the zoomies. And then we get a money shot in this trailer, which is Coruscant. But it's like, we saw Coruscant in Andor, but this is post Return of the Jedi Coruscant, which is huge.
Yeah, it's massive. It looks kind of different, which I like. It would at this time.
It looks, to me, it looked very Attack of the Clones.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
To
okay.
me.
I think it's like, it's a maybe. Little more Blade Runner looking to me. It's not quite like, there's not quite as much like ambient light, even though it's still that nighttime kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just looking a little darker.
It's just exciting because like Coruscant, I think just from, you know, we grew up watching the prequels in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Coruscant's a huge planet for us. Like just nostalgia wise, like, yeah, it's Coruscant. Like everything happens on Coruscant. That's the most important planet in the galaxy, even though we didn't see it at all for more than multiple movies. I don't know. It's just, that was really, 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 really cool.
I wonder how much time we'll spend there. I wonder if we'll get a look at what the underworld's like these days. If we're, you know, I don't know. We'll see. But it is always interesting to see, you know, a familiar place in a new time period.
Yeah, it makes me wonder then, like, what is Dr. Pershing doing there? Because we see him just riding in a speeder at night. He is an Imperial scientist. Who's he there to meet? Who's he there to talk to? Maybe he's there to get some DNA. I don't know.
It'd be really interesting if they did a like Operation Paperclip type thing with him, where like NASA recruited a bunch of like Nazi rocket scientists to come work for us and stuff. Like the New Republic could be doing the same thing with genetics, and Dr. Pershing could be going to work for them.
Interesting.
Seems more like an Andor storyline.
It does.
But
that does. But we did see like what we assume is the beginnings of Snoke in season two on Nevarro in that lab. Mm-hmm. And they were definitely using Grogu's DNA to help like grow whatever that thing was. But we assume sure. maybe a proto Snoke
ends up as Snoke down the line.
Yeah. So keep that in the back of your mind as we head into March 1st. Then we hear Carson Teva, our good friend Carson Teva from season one and two. He says, there's something dangerous happening out there. And by the time it becomes a big enough for you to act, and we can see him talking to someone, unsure who, there's some funny kind of editing things going on there. Yeah. It cuts to Mando, but I don't think he's saying that to Mando. And then we cut to underground caverns.
Yep.
And we see someone pick up the shell of an old Mando helmet.
Yeah.
It's like ashy, maybe.
It looks to me like it's like predating the black glass type stuff behind the visor. It looked like an open, old style, ancient mask type thing.
Yeah.
So the Mask of Mandalore used to be a big deal. It'd be easy to roll that into like as being Tar Vizsla's helmet, you know.
That would be great.
And then I have a wild theory revolving around. I'll get to it here. Okay, it involves a later shot in the trailer.
So this cavern is probably the entrance to the Mines of Mandalore. Is that what you're guessing?
Yeah, I mean, light is still filtering in and stuff. It doesn't look like it's super deep down. I don't know.
It's interesting. That's interesting. So then we hear Carson Teva say over that kind of scene, it'll be too late. So something dangerous is happening. By the time you actually do anything to do, like, it's too late. Which is kind of like, that's the first order for sure.
Yeah.
Then we get another money shot, which I was not expecting in this trailer at all.
Yeah.
Grogu looks up and we see another Order 66 flashback. Wow. Someone is trying to come through the doors.
Mm-hmm.
You got Jedi defending what I assume is Grogu in that scene. Just incredible.
Yeah. When lightsabers lit up and like multiple lightsabers in the Mando trailer, I was like, what is happening?
And they're showing that in the trailer. That just shows you like how crazy the season's going to be.
Right. That's not like a little thing that they were holding for, you know, the season. So you ready to get a little wild?
Oh, take me on a journey, Mac.
I think what you have said is the most likely thing, that this is Order 66. It's Grogu's remembering some things about his own experiences and stuff. So there is a wild, there's a force power that not a lot of Jedi have, but some have. Quinlan Voss being the biggest kind of example of this.
I see where
which
you're
is going psychometry.
Here. Yep.
And so it's basically you can get memories through touching items. And, like, memories can kind of be passed through the Force, like, through physical items. And so what if that's not Order 66 at all? But that is when, like, Death Watch broke into the Jedi Temple to get the Darksaber back. And Tar Vizsla's mask was in there.
Oh, Mac. I wasn't with you for a second, but now I'm like, oh my God.
Just a thought I had. I think the most likely thing is that that's Order 66. We've already seen it. There's already precedent. The robes and everything kind of look like that era.
The only thing that goes against that theory, I'm playing it back right now. I'm looking at
I've
Grogu.
Had like 10 minutes to think
I know,
about this
yeah.
too. So
we literally, just came out. Yeah, it just came out and we started podcasting immediately. You can see the reflection of the lightsabers. Mm. In his eyes.
Got it.
But it's interesting because these Jedi are marching towards that door as like it's clearly being cut open. I don't think you're on the wrong track though. What if on the other side of that door are some Mandalorians.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because then, what, like, that is emotional conflict in itself of, like, you are being protected by a Mandalorian and you are considering becoming one. And it's potentially because, like, of Mandalorians, you're in the situation that you were in.
Yeah.
I mean, clone troopers kind of look like Mandalorians anyway, but...
I mean, they are genetically copied from a Mandalorian, but... Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just some interesting thoughts that I think would... I think both of these things will, like, if it's Order 66 or... And Mandalorians are involved somehow, or Grogu kind of relates to the clones as being Mandalorians, or if it ends up being some crazy weird thing with psychometry or whatever. I think both things would inform a question Grogu's going to have, which is like, okay, I've made choices with, you know, with Master Luke in the Book of Boba Fett. Like, I've now, like, kind of chosen my way. I have to start building my identity as this thing I've chosen. And what does that mean? And how do I kind of line up my past with this new direction, you know?
It's interesting, though. Like, I know we're kind of spending a lot of time on this part of it, but I think that's it's big to the, like, they're showing in this trailer, we're going to deal with Grogu's past.
Yeah.
And what does that mean for the show? That's interesting. We got the hint of it in the Book of Boba Fett, and now we're getting another hint in this trailer. I think whoever's on that other side of the door is big. Whoever took Grogu, it's a big deal.
It's that whatever comes through that door is a bigger deal. And it's not a lightsaber coming through that door.
Is it Mandalorians?
What I don't
know. The Empire, or Mandalorians, like, I don't know. So someone's trying to cut through the door. Then we cut to a watery planet with TIE interceptors chasing a Fang fighter, and it's a really cool sequence. I love TIE interceptors. Those are my favorite type of TIEs, by the way. They kind of look like claws themselves. The trailer makes it look like Din is flying this thing.
The Fang fighter?
Yeah. I don't think he is.
No, I think...
I think it's Bo-Katan.
I think it could be Bo-Katan. It could be like a Finn Rao cameo, something like that. Because as we discussed in our before the trailer predictions, he's around.
As far as we know, he's around. And he was a Mandalorian protector. And he was basically like this ace fighter pilot in the Clone Wars. And his first Mandalorian outfit is the best one. His second one is awful. But
it was a real downgrade.
It was so bulky. But it's interesting. This Fang fighter is flying towards, if you look in one of the scenes, this watery planet, there looks like there's a castle that it's flying towards. And I'm wondering if that's like Bo-Katan's like place.
Like the where she's kind of holed up at.
The owl's nest, yeah. I don't know what we're going to call that thing, but we'll call it the owl's nest for right now. It's interesting. But then you see like the, you know, maneuvering through the canyons and stuff. But then we see Din. Maybe it could be Din. I don't know. Because he's definitely on a watery planet too. But he could be like flying in support of the Fang fighter, right? Like show up behind the interceptors, take them out, and then they both land together. Like, I could handle it, blah, blah, blah.
Do
blah,
a
blah.
Classic Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, can we just call it the Din 1?
The Din 1.
The Din 1 I like fighter.
That. I like that.
Cool.
The Mandalorian tells Grogu to hang on, and then we cut to a droid cantina.
Yeah.
I think this is a droid cantina.
It's their revenge for not being able to be in the Mos Eisley cantinas for so many years.
They have their own cantina where they're just like charging. What's really, really cool about that scene is there's like three battle droids from the Clone Wars just sitting there and standing there. And they're like, they look real. I don't think that's CGI. which is really cool.
I don't know.
They look a little different to me.
I don't know. A lot of times you can't tell until you're actually watching it on the finished episode to see finalized lighting effects and all that kind of stuff. So
again, going back to that theme of maybe Din needs a droid for some reason, you know, and then that's where R5 comes in. But it's interesting, especially considering battle droids killed Din's real parents. So
right. I wonder if that'll come up at all.
Yeah. Yep. He might just take those three out. We'll see. Then out of that scene, we cut to a quick shot of the Mandalorians dropping, which we've seen before. What's interesting, and here's what we don't know here. Paz Vizsla is leading a group of Mandalorians. If you look behind them, they're kind of a multicolored group of armor. But then if you look, that statue has been destroyed or CGI'd out. I don't know.
But or IG-88 arose from his stasis and has joined the fray.
Yeah. I don't know.
Or IG-11.
Yeah. You can see the Mandalorians moving behind him. So, and then you see a Mandalorian pulling on an alien that falls. And then you see Babu Frick. And
yeah.
I'm gonna call the other one Mrs. Frick, because I don't know what that relationship is, but they cheer them on. They're excited about what's going on. And again,
they're just little dudes, and we're glad they're there because they're fun.
They also work on droids.
They do. That's true.
Droids are a big thing in this season. So we see Paz leading the assault on the same city from before. But here's the thing. If that's Navarro, let's go back to that real quick. If that's Navarro, and Paz is leading an assault, is he saving the city again, or is he attacking the city?
So when he came up earlier, that's what I was getting at. I'm not sure. He could be doing either one at this point. I'm trying to see who else. I think they've selected the angle very well that they're showing of this scene, because it looks like these are all kind of mismatched, more Children of the Watchy, you know.
Yes.
Mandalorians.
So I'm wondering then if that dropship is Bo-Katan's Mandalorians and we're going to get like them fighting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or working together. I don't know.
The dropship is either Bo-Katan or it's a Death Watch flashback. That's the only two options in my head. They look kind of like the Death Watch Mandos that like picked Din up as a child, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of the same color. But my money is probably on these are, you know, Bo-Katan's folks. These are Night Owls and the like.
There is a third option where the Children of the Watch are just repurposing old Death Watch armor because they don't have much more.
Yeah.
That's possible.
Yeah.
I mean, because Paz Vizsla would be probably from Death Watch, because we have no idea what pre-Vizsla like in relation to Paz was, but
right.
He was the leader of Death Watch. So,
yep.
We see the Fricks, just the Fricks.
The Fricks.
cheering them on. And then we cut to a scene back to that glass planet, and a creature jumps down in front of like an entrance.
Looked kind of Predator monster-y.
Little monstery for sure, and a creature jumps down from the glass and blocks Grogu. But then we see another angle where he flies out and hits the ground, and Grogu emerges, and we see that Grogu had pushed him out with the Force. And we hear Din say, "This is the way," and that's the end of the trailer.
Yeah, that moment in the trailer didn't play for me that well.
Same.
I think just the way it's cut, it just didn't do it for me. It seemed like the cheap little laugh they just kind of tacked onto the end or whatever.
Yeah, I agree. Like that, like,
yeah.
Like I could have
done without.
I know Grogu can use the Force.
Right.
Yeah. There's nothing new about that. But yeah, so, okay. Just first, after going through everything, where do you feel we're heading towards with March 1st in season 3 of The Mandalorian?
Well, I think whatever is coming, you know, down the road for us, I think whatever awaits is going to be amazing. The trailer looks awesome. Introduced a bunch of ideas and stuff that have me, you know, really excited. Got my gears turning pretty good. I definitely think the trailer speaks to some, like, Children of the Watch versus whether it's, like, Bo-Katan's folks or just, like, mainstream Mandalorian society. Yeah. I think there's going to be some of those conflicts for sure, as we've kind of been, you know, speculating and everything. I think we're going to be, diving into some Grogu Jedi kind of history type stuff. I mean, that shot making the trailer really, really surprised me, of all the lightsabers.
But it was different from the... You're right. There's something off about it, because it's different from what we saw in the Book of Boba Fett. Because I'm looking right now at stills from the Book of Boba Fett, and you've got... I mean, you got the green lightsaber guy. I think that's the only consistent thing, it feels like. I don't know. There's something about that scene. I don't know. If you got any ideas about it, call into our voicemail hotline and let us know, because I think that's a big deal.
Do we have any idea at all when the Darksaber was recovered from the Jedi Temple?
We have, yes, we do kind of have an idea. It would be about the time. So if Darth Bane is canon, it'd be about that time, about 1,000 years before everything.
Okay. I don't know. I'm like, what if Grogu was a lot older than we thought, and like, he was taken along with the Darksaber, and that tied him up in all the Mando stuff from the beginning. You know, I don't know. I was just kind of wondering about that. Yeah, but that timeline doesn't really work for most of the things I was thinking about.
It could be interpreted that way, because the way Finn Rao tells the story in Star Wars Rebels, it leaves it up to, like, there is some room for interpretation, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
we're also just changing things a little bit in some regards. So. Yes.
Right.
And that's okay.
That is okay. That is okay. If you guys have any idea, call into our voicemail hotline, 205-259-6675. You can find that in the show notes as well. But I'm with you, Mac. I think this season's going to be incredible. I can't wait to see, like, what surprises they have in store for us, because, like, what they showed us in this trailer was surprising to me. The right. fact that they showed those things makes me think we're getting even bigger surprises for season three of The Mandalorian. So I cannot wait. I think this is just going to be so much fun, and we can't wait for you guys to join us. Make sure you're subscribed on whatever podcast app that you're listening to. And another thing that really helps us out, if you can go and give us a 5-star review, that just, man, that helps the algorithm. It gets us out in front of people, and just share it with people too. Like, hey, did you see that trailer? And then share the podcast where we're, you know, breaking it down for people, because we want everybody to be included in the conversation when it comes to Star Wars. And so that's a fun way to do it. And it's just so much fun to talk about, speculate. And, you know, this, I'm just excited and I'm pumped, because this is really like the official start to, like, oh yeah, we're back, baby.
Yeah.
We're back.
Yeah. So there's some Mando season.
There's some things to look forward to in terms of the podcast. We kind of hinted at it in February, bringing back something that's very Mandalorian specific to kind of prepare us for season three of The Mandalorian. We've got some other things that we're working on that's a surprise for you guys. I think it's going to be a fun year. I think this year is going to be a lot of fun, and we want to make sure that you're included in it. So join the fun, subscribe, don't miss anything. Any last thoughts, Mac, before we head out of here? It's getting late for us, but...
Yeah, I think I'm just excited for Star Wars. I'm excited for The Mandalorian Season 3, and I'm excited to talk about it with you and hear about it from our listeners.
Oh, one last thing. It just popped in my head. Before we get out of here, which we're about to, Coruscant, we see you were talking about the idea that Jedi, you know, they touch something, they remember. What is that called again? Psychometry?
Yeah.
What if Grogu is on Coruscant for some reason? Also with Dr. Pershing, maybe?
What if that wasn't post Return of the Jedi Coruscant at all?
Ooh.
It is. Now you got me saying Coruscant. I'm a Coruscant guy, but.
Sorry. Or you could say it like George Lucas does, Coruscant. So
yep.
You could say it like that. All right, guys. You guys are amazing. We love you.
Absolutely.
If you want Bad Batch coverage, it's on our Patreon, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. We do little Bad Batch recaps, minisodes over there. And yeah, I think that's it.
Yep. Stay tuned. Keep your eyes peeled. Until we see you next time, keep the watch.